So for excused absences, then we have Adriana Casanay, Vanessa Dixon Briggs, and Aki Tanaka.
And Darlene.
Darlene and Bill Foster.
I'm sorry, Bill Foster and Darlene, right.
Yep.
I'm going to get a glass of water.
Julie, yep. This is Heather.
Yeah.
I just talked with Otis, and he was already trying to fix it.
Okay.
There's some issues, so.
Okay. Okay, so then I actually, I do see Egberto Willis. Egberto, do you want to acknowledge your presence?
Present.
Thank you.
Great. So that means that besides the two who requested excused absences, we have Aki Tanaka and Vanessa Dixon Briggs who aren't here. Would someone like to make a motion? Adriana, I see your hand.
Adriana's here now. Okay, thank you.
Can I make a motion to excuse everybody?
Thank you. Is there a second?
I'll second. This is Heather.
Thank you. Is there any discussion of the motion to excuse the absences of those not present?
No.
Hearing no discussion, is there any objection to the motion to excuse those absences? Hearing no objections, we'll consider those absences excused. Next up, I need to identify timekeepers. Can I get someone willing to time people?
I can do that.
Thank you, McFadden. And can I get someone willing to time items? And I'll note that Darlene sometimes does it, and she's not here this evening. Anyone?
I'll do it, Julie. This is Heather.
Okay, thank you. So Adriana posted in the chat, can anyone hear me? And the answer is I cannot hear you, Adriana, and you're not muted on, or at least according to my Zoom. So do you want to try again to speak? And if we can't hear you, Adriana, I wonder if it's worth leaving the Zoom call only to come right back to see if, for some strange reason that solves the problem. That's the only other thing I can think of off the top of my head. Because you look like you're not muted, but yet I can't hear you. I can see your hand up. But... okay, so while we're doing, waiting for Adriana to come back, let me start with reading the open portion of the agenda. So we can do agenda approval, which is a 5-minute item, Heather. So let me continue after approving the agenda, we have approving minutes of open sessions for 5 minutes. We have an issue on the disqualification of candidates at WBAI for 20 minutes. KPFK LSB committee election issue for 30 minutes. We have the ED report and Q&A for 20 minutes. We have the general counsel report and Q&A for 10 minutes. I'm not 100% certain whether Arthur has an open session report, but he's there just in case. I have a motion from the strategic planning committee for 15 minutes. I have the holdover motion on community advisory boards that we had postponed the last time we met, and then we
can
close
hear
out.
Me now?
Yes, I can hear you now, but hang
Thank
on,
you.
Let me finish reading the agenda. Thank you though. Glad your volume is fixed or sound. And then we close out the open session with the usual unfinished business, new business, and then a motion to move into executive session at a time certain of 10:30. So I move the agenda, the open portion of the agenda that is. Can I get a second?
Second.
Thank you, Fred. Discussion of the agenda.
Sharon,
go ahead.
I just want to make sure that I had sent in a request to add some information on the agenda regarding
yes.
that, and I just want to make sure that that is added.
That is
added.
Yes, it has been added. It's item number 4, so it's the first thing we do after approving minutes, if we have any.
Point of information?
Okay. Yeah, go ahead, Teresa. Yeah.
Can you have you sent out a copy of a motion regarding this?
Motion regarding what?
The item number 4.
No, there's no, I don't have a motion for that.
If we don't have a motion, why does it become first on the agenda with no notice, practically?
Well, okay, so, two things. One is, I think, it's because it's about the, you know, the current delegate elections, and so, that's obviously time sensitive and important, right? And then the second thing is, there has been a lot of email traffic about it. I don't know if everybody gets the same email traffic that I get. And so I think we need to put it on there for that reason. I don't know that there's a motion. Someone might be willing to make a motion from the floor.
Point of information.
Yes, go ahead, Fred.
I have a question. Didn't the NES make a ruling on this? And doesn't the NES have the ultimate authority?
So, Fred, in some sense, to answer that question is to start discussing that item, and we're on agenda approval.
I don't understand why it's on the agenda when it's my understanding the NES makes that determination.
Fair enough. So the NES did make a determination. There's email that has Arthur Schwartz, a thread with Arthur Schwartz, who said, you know, to the people who were complaining that they wanted to appeal the NES decision, Arthur said, there's no appeal process, but I suppose you could take it to the PMB. And so I put it on the agenda, right? I don't want to be accused of not being sensitive to the fact that there are people who have concerns about the elections. I think we may be able to dispense with it quickly, but, you know, just ignoring it is probably not a wise course of action. And Sharon Salam asked me to put it on the agenda, so I put it on the agenda. Okay. Any other discussion of the agenda? Adriana, are you trying to speak right now?
No.
Shouldn't
we just, rather than just have a general discussion, shouldn't we at least have something to look at before we have start this discussion?
Okay, I read all my email and did my day job, so, you know, I mean, I think everything you need to know is in, you know, most of the email, which I believe the PMB was copied on a lot of that email traffic. I think we can make up a motion on the fly.
The time is up on this, Julie.
Thank you. Are there any objections to approving the open portion of the agenda? Hearing no objections, we'll consider the open portion of the agenda approved. That takes us to approving minutes of open sessions, a 5-minute item. But Nancy, do we have any open session minutes to approve?
Yes, I sent the the minutes from September 7th open session, right before the meeting to the PNB to everyone.
Got it. Thank you, Nancy. Would someone like to move that we approve the minutes of September 7th?
Make a motion that we approve the minutes of December 7th.
Thank you, Sharon. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you, Donna. Any discussion of the minutes?
Yes. One thing, the version that you got, I've already fixed it, but it had a typo in the notes from the, ED. I was trying to spell the word plus and I left out the L, and I misspelled it, but I have fixed it in the version that you are going to approve.
Got it. Thank you, Nancy. Appreciate that. Are there any objections to Nancy's correction to the minutes? Hearing no objections, we'll consider the minutes corrected. Are there any objections to approving the minutes as corrected?
No.
Hearing no objections, we'll consider the minutes of September 9th approved as corrected by Nancy. That takes us to the first item of substance on the agenda, which is the issue of disqualification of candidates at WBAI. Okay, so before I do that, let me note that Vanessa is here. Vanessa, would you like to acknowledge your presence for the stream?
I am here. Hopefully Donna's here too. We just finished the candidates forum. Okay, thanks.
Yep. And it appears that Aki Tanaka is here as well.
Yeah, I'm here.
Thank you. I'll add you.
Point of information.
Go ahead, McFadden.
For this first item four, you want 2 minute or 90 seconds?
Let's go with 90 seconds. Okay. So, Sharon, are you prepared to kick off the discussion of this item? This is the item about, disqualification of candidates. Go ahead. Hang on. What was your point of information, McFadden?
How many candidates are currently running on the WBAI slate? And what is the percentage of vote so far?
Can someone on the election committee answer that? I don't know that kind of detail off the top of my head. Sharon, why don't you go ahead and speak to the issue?
Well, I imagine I received the same messages as you received through the thread of information that was passed around regarding the situation that we are faced with here today. And that is one of the members who's running for election being suspended and a program being cut regarding it. And I'm very concerned that the situation seems to have an appearance that it might have some bias behind it because of the way it happened. And one of the things that reasons why I'm saying that is that there have been times in the past where people have spoken and did much more than this individual did because, from my understanding, there was no discussion regarding the election at all, just other program material regarding issues that might be of interest to the community at large. And there have been members who have spoken regarding issues that were part of the election plan, and other remedies were offered to them to resolve the situation. These same remedies were offered to this group as well, but it was like you offer the remedy, they agree to the remedy, and then all of a sudden you remove the remedy and you throw the whole thing out. And it makes it seem as if there's a prejudicial stance regarding these individuals, or a let's get tough attitude on them, when your policies in the past have allowed these remedies, same remedies, to occur, and we have moved on with the remedies at large. That's one of my main concerns. And then to remove the producer off the air, and I don't understand that. Is that something new?
So I do think that the issue here is that the NES had, well, let me take a step back and say that a programmer who is a staff candidate had a candidate who's a listener member candidate on their show and interviewed them about, as far as I am aware, I did not listen to the show, but as far as I know, it was not about, it was not, it was an interview, but it was not about, running as a delegate per se, right? So there was no open campaign.
That is correct.
However, it is the case that, that's right. And thanks, Sharon. And it is the case that, the National Election Supervisor has all candidates.
Oh, hold on. Sharon, one second. I'm trying to get away from this noise. Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. That the National Election Supervisor has all candidates, staff and listener member delegates, candidates, sign a fair campaign provision. And, you know, there are a bunch of things listed there, including that, of course, staff members who are running have to be, well, not have to be, because there are multiple ways that you can be staff, but many staff candidate, staff candidates are staff candidates because they're on-air personalities. And so obviously that's part of their duties to be on-air. And so there is no prohibition against staff candidates being on the air for obvious reasons. But there is a prohibition against listener member candidates being on the air during the period of the elections because the prohibition is for a listener member candidate to be on the air unless they're part of a candidate forum to which all listener member candidates were invited. And so there's a difference between how we treat staff candidates and how we treat listener candidates, and that the NES's remedy, initially was because of this violation that, they had to provide the opportunity for, and I think the number was something like 27 other, listener member candidates to be given an equal amount of airtime, which would be an hour each, because I believe this was a 1 hour show that the interview occurred on. And as far as I know, the interview was the whole show. And so I think that was the remedy that was agreed to. And then I think the, National Election Supervisor reflected on the fact then that, it was really an impractical, even though the candidates had agreed to it, that it was an impractical remedy because of the shortness of time and the likelihood that some of those candidates would be, on at odd hours, et cetera, or hours that other people couldn't hear them, et cetera. So then the NES withdrew that remedy and said instead that because, in fact, both candidates had signed the fair campaign provisions that included this and so should have been well aware of the fact that what they did, both of them should have been well aware of the fact that what they did was a violation of the fair campaign provisions, and that it's very clear when you sign the fair campaign provisions that, the consequence of violating them is, some remedy up to and including disqualification, and that it's at the sole discretion of the National Election Supervisor, who then disqualified both candidates. So at any rate, that's Arthur's take on it. And so if someone would like to make a motion, one way or the other, I will start recognizing people.
I'd like to respond to that.
Go ahead, Sharon.
Well, I can understand that might be Arthur's motion, but when the offer was offered, and it has been offered like that in the past, many people had agreed to come on, and others possibly would have continued to sign up. That's where the problem comes in, because it seems like you all were doing some kind of unfair something or whatever it is to try to eliminate these particular people from being able to run or do whatever it is that other people were doing and not fulfill the agreement. It would have been different if the NASP person had said, well, let me think about it. But they didn't say that. They went to the old way that this particular issue have been handled in the past and agreed to it. And something is just not right about what it is that was done. I don't know if someone approached this person and said, well, let's do XYZ. Let's change that. I know Arthur has his opinion on it. I don't know if he was the one who approached them and decided that things should be changed for these particular individuals, even though they were complying with the remedy that had been offered.
Time.
Thanks. I will ask, does anyone from, probably most likely from WBAI, but it could be someone from the Elections Committee, does anyone know that someone approached the NES to request that the two individuals be disqualified instead of adhering to the remedy?
Callum for the stack.
Okay. Well, let me, I have a stack, so I got you, Teresa. You're after Adriana. Dingman, you're up.
Okay. Well, I don't know what the member is referring to in terms of past ways of handling this, but on June 1st, all the candidates were supposed to agree to the fair campaign provisions. They took effect. On August 15th, the ballot phase actually began. And this particular show was at 1500 hours on August 24th, which is at beginning of afternoon drive. Now, whether the people, I don't know what was in their minds, either intentionally or not, whether they didn't pay attention to the fair campaign provision rules or not, what happened was one person had an hour to discuss issues that were not related to the campaign. However, the provisions of the fair campaign rules, which apply to everybody, Rule 7 says listener candidates are not permitted to call into shows or otherwise allow their voices to be heard on air, even if they do not use their names. And I could go on, but that's one violation. And the second violation is that no foundation or radio station management or staff may use or permit the use of radio station airtime to endorse, campaign, or recommend in favor of or against any other candidate, blah, blah, blah. Nor may airtime be made available to some listener delegate candidates, but not to others in any capacity. So here we have a situation where, again, it reflects how the problems of the debates of the listener delegates are handled in general. I personally think we need 6 to 7 times to have that. I'm going to finish my comment. So Rule 1 clearly was violated, and Rule 7 was clearly violated, and I think Rule 2 was violated. So the question is, do people obey the rules or not? Or if there's to be exceptions made, then the rules don't apply to anybody. Then, frankly, everybody should be allowed to get on the air for an hour and discuss their opinions about any kind of political issue. And that essentially gives them free advertisement. Who knows how many people voted as a result of listening to that 1 week after the ballots were sent out. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim. Fred, you're next.
I would like to affirm exactly what Jim said, and to actually acknowledge that it was during drive time, which is traditionally the most listened hour of the day. Also, I'd like to say you made the comment they should have been. No, there's not a question of what they should have been. They signed the agreement. There it is. The rules are the rules, and it is really, really inappropriate for this issue to be addressed here in this body. The NES made a decision, and we need to stick by the decision. I will remind people that there are 29 people running for these positions at WBAI, and less than half of the required votes have been passed in the 4 weeks that we've been collecting votes. This is going to go, we have been warned by the NES, this is going to go into overtime unless something is drastically done. And I think changing the rules to accommodate these two people who violated the rules is a great disadvantage to every other candidate and a disadvantage to the entire network. We need to abide by our rules and regulations.
Sharon to the stack.
I gotcha. Adriana's next.
And Teresa after Adriana.
Right.
Yes. Well, I agree with the NES have the authority to make decision, but she is expected to use her power reasonably unfair. When you tell to some candidate, when you make a decision and the people abide with that decision, because somebody mentioned all the rules that were broken, but I believe that somewhere, I'm sorry I didn't read, I didn't remember the exactly where, but that's very clearly that you need to give the same option to other candidates. And that was like that. You cannot flip in the middle, you know, after you make a decision and people are correcting already what you see that is violation. That happened, for example, I remember perfectly that happened in KPFT some years ago and was the only remedy that was taken against that candidate, listener candidate. They decided, well, okay, his, you know, how do you call those cards that they play? They will take his card out and will not play during the rest of the election. That was the remedy. Nobody canceled him and nobody disqualified the programmer that did it. I believe that we need to be fair.
Time.
We have a problem in KP. Thank you. I will finish. I think that we have the problem in WBAI exactly now. You don't have enough people voting. Didn't we alienate people enough? Do we need to keep doing this? I agree that the NES, and the last is just a question. Didn't you tell us, Julie, last meeting that the council, Schwartz, was helping the NES? Is she helping her in this decision too? Thank you.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Adriana, I didn't follow that last question that you asked me, that who is helping the NES?
You told us that Albert Schwartz, the council, was helping the NES. Is he helping now with this decision too? Because that is my question to you.
I don't know the answer to that. I know is that on occasion, the NES consults Arthur as our general counsel. I do not know if in this instance... Oh, Arthur's here. Go ahead, Arthur, if you would like to answer that question. We're talking about the WBAI disqualifications. Did the NES consult you on this?
Yes.
Yes. There you go.
After someone said they appealed, in fact, they appealed to me, so I got involved.
Yep.
Arthur, what can we do about this? So I said, appeal to the national, I'm not sure the national actually has authority to do it, but I guess it's the national board of candidates. So, the rules say that it's in the sole discretion of the NES.
That's right. It's clear that no one but the national has the authority, and the question might be, do we even have the authority? Teresa, you're up next.
In response to someone's question as to who was complaining about it, if there is a complaint or if there is an appeal, like say, hey, this person had an unfair advantage because they were interviewed exclusively on this show, that is against the fair campaign. It doesn't matter who made that complaint. Somehow it was called to the attention of the election supervisor. And that's a good thing. In regard to something that Director Casanave said about KPFT, I vaguely remember something. It could very well be that a programmer accidentally played something from the archives that someone was in.
No, it wasn't that.
It could have very, okay, but the point of the matter is, as if I remember it correctly, it was a very brief time, and therefore by not playing the carts, which were played over and over again, they could actually remove them from the carts, so their name was not repeated. They didn't, we're not given any more time than any of the other candidates. That's all I say. And I do appreciate, that the election supervisor has reviewed the situation and has made a decision based upon our rules. Thank you.
Next up is Sagerton.
Thank you. Yeah, I want to, first of all, just to preface to say that there's a lot of hand-wringing about whether there's going to be quorum met at PFW and WBAI, and I certainly hope that it is reached, but WBAI has a history of having a flurry of activity at the last couple of days in an election, and then we reach quorum. So if that pattern holds true, I hope that it won't be a problem. But I appreciate everybody's pushing to get the vote out, and hopefully that will be successful. The NES, yes, has the sole authority to decide this matter. It's not a good look that she went one way and then she went another way, but that is her sole discretion. And we could have a motion and ask her to do something different, as we did when we asked her to extend the time for candidates to be registered as candidates and to get their nominations received, but she turned us down. We passed two resolutions to that effect, and she turned us down. So we can go ahead and pass a resolution. I will vote against it because I think the policies behind these rules are important. But we could do that, and then she could either change her mind again, or she could just ignore whatever we do. So,
time.
Yeah. All right. I'm done. Thank you.
Thanks. I see Dingaman's hand next, but, and then I see Fred's, and the both of you have spoken already. So, you know, please speak quickly this time. Go ahead, Dingaman.
Julie, before we go, the time is up now on this item.
Oh, thank you, Heather. So I would need a, motion to extend if we're going to keep talking about this issue.
I make a motion to exhaust the stack.
Second.
Okay. Thank you, Sharon. The stack is, for everybody's benefit, Dingaman, then Fred, then Adriana, then Sagerton. So actually, that's the stack.
So long. And I'm on the stack. Before me.
And Sharon, that's right, I'm sorry. And Sharon has to be on the stack in between. She's in between Dingaman and Fred. So it's five people on the stack.
No, that's all right. I'll let them go. Ahead.
I got your spot on the stack. So are there any objections to the motion to exhaust the stack of five? Hearing no objections, we'll continue. Go ahead, Dingaman.
Well, obviously, it would be very difficult to have 27 hours devoted to remedy this. And my suggestion, I don't know if I'm making a motion, is to have more listener candidate forums before the 30th at each of the stations that are having problems making quorum. And I'd actually make a motion that we recommend that the NES authorize more listener candidate forums to meet the issue of having people heard, and then perhaps, you know, make sure there's not going to be an expenditure of money beyond the 30th. The show itself was a thoughtful show, but the point is that it was on a time when there's a lot of people listening, and it creates an unfair advantage of one particular group of people as opposed to another group of people. And people should know these rules are serious. People respect them. And, you know, it's not wise to essentially act like, oh, I didn't know these things existed. And, and then in some cases, I saw some of the responses where they ignored the fact that these campaign rules exist. So, you know, come on, guys. These are people who are experienced in these elections. And in the case of both of them, they've been on the LSB before. So, you know, I don't know what to say. It's an unfortunate mistake that people made. And, that's the price of making a mistake.
Next is Adriana. Sharon.
Oh, I said that could go first, and I'll go. Just a second.
Okay. Adriana, you're next then.
Fred was before me.
I was.
Yeah, go ahead, Fred.
We never actually voted on extending the time, and I'm calling the question.
I asked if there were any objections, and I heard none.
I didn't hear that. I would have objected.
Madam Chair?
Yes,
Adriana. Please, this is an important point, and Fred normally uses it. You cannot have the staff talk, and after that, ask to call the question.
Okay, you can point of information. I didn't hear anybody call the
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, you still be in the chair, or is Fred allowed to interrupt?
A point of information.
I'm sorry, I can't get a word in edgewise between the two of you. All right.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What I'm asking is to apply the rule and explain to Fred.
Adriana, I'm ignoring the calling of the question, and I called on you, so go. Okay.
Perfect. Thank you, Madam Chair. What I'm trying to say is this happened before, and never was a remedy like that, and never was the programmer eliminated too, because it's even ridiculous to take somebody from there and disqualify that person to run. I don't think that is fair. And like I said, it happened before, more than once in this foundation. Never was taking a decision and then flip on that and change. That never happened before since I'm in this foundation. I think that maybe 10 years, never saw something like that. I believe that it's not fair. And I agree that the national election, but nobody is even saying anything when the national election supervisor is even talking about myself, talking about the candidate without any problem with other people. That is not even, nobody's saying anything. You know, this is not fair. Should we disqualify her? Because this PMB fired
the national election
supervisor, fired a national election supervisor when that national election supervisor said that we didn't have clean list and we couldn't run an election like that. Then the PMB, you know, used the rules whenever they wanted. Okay?
Thank you, Adriana. Sagerton, you're next. And then we've exhausted the stack. Go ahead,
Sagerton. Sharon is last.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Go ahead, Sagerton.
Thank you, Chair. I'm tempted to ask for the regular order and the calling of the stack, but I won't do it. I just want to say something briefly about the policy behind this. The policy of not having staff put listener candidates on the air, if the listener candidate's not coming on the air, is to prevent the airwaves being flooded with listener candidates trying to get some attention or, get some name recognition, whatever. So it's an important policy to enforce. And again, these are unique circumstances. The idea that the NES was somehow influenced or somebody approached her, there's no evidence for that. There were some emails going around, but it's without evidence to say that the NES was approached by someone who influenced her decision is inappropriate, I think. So I support the policy behind this. She does have sole discretion. We can vote against her decision and hope that she changes her mind. Again, I'll vote against that. And there you have it. Thank you.
Sharon?
Well, if I recall, the last election that we had, during David Rothenberg's shows, several candidates spoke. And nothing as punitive as this was ever done to him or the candidates who spoke on his show. That's what makes it so selective. If you have a precedent that says this is the remedy, and the people agree with the remedy, and candidates starting to sign up to agree to the remedy, then, you know, I don't understand what the problem is. You don't know if you're going to have 27, 30, or whatever people signing up. All the people might not want to sign up to be on the on that particular show or be involved in that. They might have other things to do. But the process was offered and accepted. That is the problem, that it was offered and accepted, and people were signing up to fulfill that agreement that had been set in place. Because it's like, when you're looking at these types of things and people change stuff, you know, you're going one way and you think this is happening and people change stuff and this is the same way it has happened in the past. It's like, you know, it's an unfair feeling that goes along with that. And it makes people feel as if something has happened that shouldn't be happening. And this is what I'm saying, because it's not fair. If it could happen for David Rothenberg, he didn't lose his show. None of those people were punished who spoke on his show and during the candidate's time. Nobody. Nobody. But on this particular time, because you have certain people, that's how it looks. It looks as if you're doing this because certain people spoke and you want to get rid of those particular people. And that's not the image that we want to have on WBAI. We want to show that we are a people's station, so that people who contribute their monies and listen to this program have a sense of fairness that goes on here, not a sense of bigotry.
Bullshit. Total bullshit.
Now, who is that saying that? Who is that? Who is that?
Jim McFadden.
No, it wasn't. It was not. And I muted the people who were speaking out of turn. Okay. Here's where we are, folks. There's not really even a motion on the floor. Dingaman made a motion that I might have decided to rule out of order, but it was never seconded. And it was about having more candidate forums, which doesn't directly address the question of whether the PMB is in favor of overturning the remedy that the NES ultimately landed on, which was disqualifying the two candidates. And so I don't have a motion that we can vote on, folks. And so time is up on this. We extended it to exhaust the stack. And I didn't hear anybody put a motion on the floor that says this is exactly what we should do. We should overturn the NES's, and substitute, you know, XYZ remedy. I mean, that's the point. That's what we would have to do this evening for this to make a difference. And we don't have one of those kinds of motions on the floor, and time is up. And so I think it's time to move on to the next item. So, who was that who said point of order? Was that Teresa?
Teresa. Yeah, go we ahead, don't have a motion. We've exhausted time. We must move on.
Right. So.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. Point of information. What was Teresa's point of order? What was the rule that was broken?
I think she was saying the same thing that I had just finished saying.
Yeah, she wanted to gain the floor with a point of order, but.
Okay, so we're moving on to the next item, having taken no action on the issue. I'm going to mute everybody. If y'all don't cut it out, unless you want to be the chair of the PMB, in which case then you have to put down a motion to say, let's vote Julie out so that we can vote somebody else in. Stop yammering when it's not your turn because you haven't yet been recognized. All right. The next item on the agenda is item 5, which is the KPFK LSB committee elections issue. And this is... just to refresh people's memory, we passed a motion in closed session that we reported on, and I want to say we did this probably 2 or 3 meetings ago. I don't remember the exact, and I need to pull the motion up so that I know exactly what we're talking about here. I didn't put it in the agenda, but at any rate, we decided to have a small investigative committee the small investigate, we took, this was the idea that, KPFK LSB was running committee elections for delegates to be on PMB committees. And, as part of that process, but there was an objection and the PMB voted on the motion to pause those elections while, we did an investigation. We were supposed to do a timely investigation. We had a, volunteers, a group of volunteers who, agreed to be on this, and I don't know that the group has met, but the group were, there were three people. It was, Teresa, Adriana, and Vanessa. And, so I'm looking to see if that group, met and has a recommendation for the PMB this evening, or if you can otherwise, give us a report so that we can move on with this item. Go ahead, Adriana.
Yes. We never convened. We never were called. And Teresa sent us an email, 2 minutes after this meeting start about the issue. I think that we need to, maybe we need to change the convener, because if we are a group that need to work on this, we need to convene and we need to talk and share the information. And I don't think that is exactly what happened here.
So I don't know that we identified someone to be the convener for this volunteer group.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, that was told exactly like that, that Teresa will convene the group.
No.
No.
Does somebody else remember doing that?
Teresa, yeah, for the staff. Vanessa remembers that.
Teresa, for the staff.
Go ahead, Teresa.
I was not declared the convener. For the last, I guess a month, I have been, researching this. And I have sent out things to Vanessa and Adriana. Maybe it's in your spam, but as I collected information, I did send information to you. And I have sent some of that information to the Pacifica National Board today. One is a timeline of meetings that Eric Jacobson attended and other people. One was the fact that on July 20th, we declared that we were going to discuss this matter. Actually, there was a motion, and it came very, very late. And very late in the evening, we decided that there would be a group that would investigate. I sent you that copy also, I believe. Then I sent you a copy of the timeline. And prior to that, the Pacifica National Board declared that the KPFK LSB consisted of these people. Then after that went out, and we know who is on the KPFK LSB, there were at least four meetings. And in those four meetings, certain people did not attend and did not ask for excused absence.
Time.
And the KPFK LSB who were there decided those people who did not attend and did not ask for excused absence would be removed. So I've sent you that information so the PNB can decide what you want to do. We could either rescind the motion of July 20th of 23, or we can make a decision based upon what I've sent you. The primary item of significance is the one that starts, it reads Eric Jacobson 2023 KPFK LSB attendance / roster / removal of delegates. Thank you.
Vanessa's next.
Okay, so a couple of things. One, my understanding was the same as Adriana's, is that Susan was the convener, or Teresa, I get the names confused, my apology. That was my understanding as well. Number two, I did not receive, to my knowledge, any information. No, it could have gone to spam. I have no idea. I've received no information. Based on the synopsis that was just given, although I did not receive that information in an email, my understanding of what occurred based from other sources is that the meeting or meetings that the person in question allegedly missed did not have a quorum, so the meeting was never held. So would love to get the opinion of a parliamentarian as to whether a person can be absent, whether the absence is, there's the requested excuse or not, if the meeting is never held.
I can tell you as a lawyer that it's not, yep. You can't be absent from a non-meeting.
Thank you.
Adriana, although I see Adriana, Beth, Teresa, and then Ali. Go ahead, Adriana.
Maybe Beth that didn't talk yet, she can go before me because I want to add something.
Okay. Go ahead, Beth.
Thank you. Am I unmuted?
Yes.
Do you hear me?
Yes. Yes, okay. We can hear you.
Thank you. I have yet to hear, having been the one who raised this issue in the first place, I have yet to hear from the committee, and nor has Mr. Jacobson. I've waited rather than to try to, lobby anybody or make my case, I've waited for questions and none have come. To the best of my knowledge, I have not received whatever Teresa or others have been providing others in the way of background material on this item. As I understand it, the KPFK recognized LSB asserts that Eric missed April 2nd, 16th, and 23rd and is therefore, by their lights, disqualified. I've emailed a screenshot of the notice for the April 2nd meeting to the entire PNB and the secretary and Arthur, documenting that notice was clearly inadequate. It wasn't. It says so right on the notice itself. There wasn't sufficient time. It was posted as an emergency meeting. When there was not, in fact, no emergency. And in fact, it did not make quorum. So.
Time.
I'm not done yet.
Yeah, well,
I have more information. I have more information. I'm reporting on this. Oh, I need additional time.
You get 30 more seconds.
Eric attended the June 4th meeting, was present, but he was notified that he had been removed, as were 8 other people in a purge. I've asked the secretary of the recognized LSB for a roster of members and attendance and an explanation of all changes for the year to date, but she disavows any responsibility for that, referring me to the minutes. But in fact, there have been no minutes posted at KPFTX since late April. I asked for the same from the other LSB on the same day, and it was provided to me in full without apology or excuse within 12 hours. As far as I'm concerned, this should clearly exonerate Eric and call into question the validity of the rest of the KPFK roster at this point. I think we actually do need an investigation into this. They've canceled close to as many meetings as they've held. And they're highly, highly disorderly meetings. They're keeping inadequate records. They can't account for the roster at this point. And I think we need a further investigation. I think Eric should be exonerated and included in the LSB, and we need a further investigation. Thank you. Thank you for hearing me out.
Teresa, or Adriana.
Okay.
I mean, now, wait a minute, hang on. You and Teresa have both already spoken, and we haven't heard from Ali and Alexa. Ali, go ahead.
Please, let her go before me.
Okay. Go ahead, Adriana.
I didn't talk in the issue. The only thing that I talked about was that we didn't receive the information. And Teresa, you said that you sent it, and your last email after we start this meeting, you said in that email, I'm sorry, I forgot to push send. It's exactly what you say in your email, or something of that order. But we didn't receive all the information, and like we said, we need to convene and have all the facts, because we cannot make decisions just because somebody else decides by herself that we have that information. No, we need to have the entire information. I hope that we can, any one of us can convene this meeting, and from the next meeting of the PMB, we will have all the facts together. Thank you.
Teresa?
If you want to postpone, I do not have the item that Elizabeth von Gutten sent me. I just have a copy of her motion that was brought up. I do not have anything other than that, other than what I requested from the people who we declared were the legitimate KPFK LSB. So the screenshot you're referring to, I don't have. If you think that we need to postpone to the next meeting so we can get that, fine. Although I have seen evidence to suggest that if you do have a meeting, and one reason why that meeting did not have a quorum is because there were a number of people that did not attend, so it was difficult to make quorum. So I think that Robert's Rules of Order says that you can document that you attempted to have a meeting and who was there. And I think that information can be used to determine that a person was absent. And otherwise you would have, a group of people could just sabotage your whole organization by having a majority of the board and then just never attending.
Fadden.
I guess I want to know, is anybody contesting that one of the three meetings that this guy missed was one that was not a meeting because it didn't reach quorum? Is there anybody contesting that he had missed three meetings that were quorum in a row? If there's no contesting that one of them didn't reach quorum, then I make a motion that we just table this and move on because it's not an issue.
I second that motion.
I'd like to speak before we table this.
Okay, so hang on. So first off, I learned some things from John Tatum. Tabling a motion is like getting rid of it permanently as opposed to postponing a motion. Postponing a motion says we're not going to deal with it tonight. And when you postpone a motion, you have to move it to, you have to say when you're postponing it to. So if you think we're postponing it to, say, the next PMB meeting, that would be the proper way to make a motion to postpone. So McFadden, I'm not sure which it was that you.
I think it's a non-issue. If it was a meeting that wasn't a meeting, and he didn't miss three meetings. So I'm just saying, thinking that we get rid of it.
So hang on. So
unless
here's
somebody
the point.
Contests that issue. So, and that's yeah. That was the.
I think that's what Ali Lex is about to say, right? Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, you're right. If it's a non-issue, it can be tabled, but I'm not sure everyone is in full accord on that non-issue point.
I had my hand up for a long time.
Yes.
Point of information.
Hang on. Nancy, was that you?
What's the motion? Is it tabling or postponing? I think that's
tabling.
It hasn't been seconded, so.
I seconded it.
Please let me speak.
You have to be recognized. I'm sorry. I didn't catch that you seconded it. Ollie, Lex, go ahead.
I'm sorry I didn't speak earlier. Maybe this information would have helped. There are five meetings in question. The meeting of 3:26, which didn't reach quorum, Eric Jacobson arrived late. The meeting of 4:02:23, he was absent without an excused absence. 4:16:23, he was absent without an excused absence. 4:23:23, he was absent for a third time with no excused absence. The chair and the chair pro tem stated in both meetings, actually all four meetings, that he reached out personally several times to Eric C. Jacobson, notifying him of our meeting and asking him if he would please participate. And then on the meeting of 6:04:23, he did show up to protest being removed. So there's actually five meetings, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And three of them he didn't show up at all. He didn't ask for an excused absence. The one that didn't reach quorum, he showed up late. And that meeting is the one that you guys are kind of arguing about. So he has three unexcused absences in a row. That LSB at KPFK voted to remove him. Case closed.
Thank you, Ali.
Point of information.
Yes, go ahead.
It's my understanding if we table this, then it's over and he is no longer on the LSB. Is that correct?
No.
Ask you, Beth.
What's the motion on the floor that we're tabling?
That we're going to have a hearing about this is my understanding.
No. So, no, we've never had a motion to have a hearing.
I so move. I move that we have a hearing.
What is it that
we're
discussing?
I move that we hear from Eric Jacobson.
What is it that we're discussing, Chair?
Beth, I haven't recognized you. So come on.
How long has my hand been up? My hand has been up for how long?
I forgot to put a timer on it. I am really deeply apologetic and sorry that I forgot to put a timer on your hand. What we are doing is, okay, folks, here's where we started. Let me repeat the bidding for you. We started out with a report from the folks who are on the committee to investigate. It is clear that the committee has not convened. I am not clear that I have ever heard more excuses from people generally. I don't just mean the three people. People waiting on their heels for someone else to do the work, right? We need to come to closure on this because one of the things we're doing is we're holding up what's going on with these committees, right? So we need to allow the KPFK LSB to get to the point where it's functioning. So it is clear that this committee, the investigative committee, has not met together. Then there was a motion on the floor to table the issue, although, I repeat, what tabling does is it means we're done talking about this, there's no motion, and for someone to bring this back, I don't know how we deal with the fact that the committee didn't come up with something that we can do this evening. And so, in an ideal world, in my spare time, I would have set up a meeting to make sure that the committee convenes, but I can't do all of that. It's too much responsibility for the chair. One of the things I think I'm going to do based on this is because I've heard from more people who have more information is I'm going to ask Beth and Ali to be part of this committee as well. And I'm going to request that you all meet. I don't have a calendar in front of me, but I can fix that. I'm going to request that you all meet by September 28th and that you're prepared to, let me put it this way. I'm going to ask that you all, put some meeting of the group of you on the calendar, and I don't care who does it, but it has to be all five of you, and, you're going to put a meeting together and you're going to find a time that works for everybody, and it's going to be sometime between now and October 2nd so that you're ready to report to the PNB, at its October 5th meeting.
Who are the additional two people?
So the additional two people, so it's, Teresa, Adriana, and Vanessa, who were the original three, plus Beth and Ali Lexa.
Madam Chair, Adriana?
Yes, go ahead, Adriana.
I said before when I spoke, I said that the intention was, and I was thinking that what we are discussing that the group will meet and come with a report by the next meeting of the PNB. It's exactly what I said. I was thinking that we were talking about that.
Okay, thanks for reiterating that. Really appreciate it.
Really, this is Heather. I'm going to second your motion.
Thank you. So my motion is that group of five, Adriana, Teresa, Vanessa, Ali Lexa, and Beth Von Gutten will meet sometime between now and October 2nd and be prepared to report to the PNB at the October 5th meeting.
Point of information?
Yeah, go ahead.
So is this an amendment to the motion to table?
No, it's a separate motion. Totally inappropriate.
substitute motion.
And you have, I don't know if you can have a...
Okay. I'm unclear what we're tabling. There was not a motion on the floor to table.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
So that's the part that I'm confused about. I'm sorry.
Got it.
And so this is a motion that I'm putting on the floor and Heather just seconded it.
Okay.
And so further discussion of my motion.
That's approved.
I have a point. Four hands up, so I don't...
Yeah. So hang on, let me look at the hands. So Beth's hands, then I see Vanessa, then Teresa, then Fred. Beth, did you want to say anything more about the motion?
Just that I, when the investigative committee stood itself up, I said at the time I put myself at their disposal. I continue to do that. I'll propose a time to meet. I think there is more information. I think we should have it prepared visually. It worked for me to put it into a spreadsheet. And that should be provided as part of this report. I'll work on that. I propose we need to hear directly from Eric, who can respond to some of the accusations that have been made too. But I'll bring that up with the committee.
Next is Vanessa.
Okay. I agree with Beth, and I'm going to ask if Beth would be willing to convene so everybody is super clear about who's convening and we're not all waiting for somebody else to do something.
I'm willing.
Thanks, Vanessa.
Thank you.
Teresa?
Fine with me.
Cool. Fred?
There was an agenda item on...
Did you? I'm sorry, Madam Chair. Were you responding to me because my hand was up?
So what I was trying to do was, I was going through, yes, because your hand was up, and what I wanted to do was go through the people, because we've got a motion on the floor, right, which is my motion about this new group meeting or this slightly larger group meeting and coming back to us by October 5th. So there's a date certain. I think the original motion just said as quickly as possible or something like that, which obviously wasn't specific enough. And my motion also says that you all have to meet by October 2nd to make sure that you are in fact ready for the October 5th meeting. So I was going through to see what people who had their hands up were saying about that motion. And so I heard from you. Did you have more to say about that, Teresa?
My hand was up, so I would like to mention something. First of all, I commend you, Madam Chair. I know it's not an easy job. Don't take it personally if we're so impatient. Sorry. I do want to call to people's attention that in Robert's Rules of Order, 12th edition, 1267, it says, proceedings in the absence of a quorum. In the absence of a quorum, any business transacted except for the procedural actions noted in the next paragraph is null and void. But if a quorum fails to appear at a regularly or properly called meeting, the inability to transact business does not detract from the fact that the society's rules required the meeting to be held and were complied with, and the meeting was convened, even though it had to adjourn immediately. I think based upon that, even in a meeting that was not convened because of quorum, you do make a note of who was there in a properly noticed meeting. Thank you.
Go ahead, Fred.
We had an agenda item. It was my understanding that Jim McFadden moved that we table the agenda item. It was seconded. I think that this new motion you've made is not appropriate.
So you can't table an agenda item. Once you've approved the agenda, we have an agenda. There's not a motion for it. You can table a motion. You can't table an agenda item. So thanks, Fred, but I'm, ruling that the motion to table is out of order. Dingaman's next.
I just have a question. Isn't there, beyond Eric, the whole question of, as I understand, I just heard earlier that 8 people were expulsed from one of these LSBs, the one that the PNB has recognized. So isn't there a wider issue to be dealt with in this report? That is the whole imbroglio and who is legitimate and who isn't legitimate going on out there in LA?
I think it's a fair question. Why are we concerned about Eric Jacobson, and why are there not more people? I mean, maybe the difference is that, Eric Jacobson is the only one who, I was going to say the only one with 3 unexcused absences, but apparently that's not the case. So, Eric Jacobson is the only one, who wants to protest, that he was removed for 3 unexcused absences, or that there's something deficient in the process. I don't really honestly know. Go ahead, Teresa, with your point of information.
Has Eric Jacobson filed any protest? No.
And point of information?
Hang on,
I filed.
Hang on, Beth. You're not recognized yet. I'm going to take a stab at answering Teresa's question, which is, to my knowledge, to the PNB, no. I don't know if he raised any objection with the LSB. Someone else would have to answer that. I'm not recognizing
point
anyone
of information.
To answer.
Excuse me.
Hang on.
Point of order. Point of order.
Hang on. Fred
That's
had a point
not
of
accurate.
Information first. So your point of information is after Fred's point of information.
Is it my turn to speak?
It is.
It is so my
for your, just for your point of information, not to go on a soliloquy.
Yes.
Go for it.
As I recall, and I would like to have this affirmed, Eric Jacobson was working with the Siri crowd rather than the LSB, and that was part of the problem with all this, that Eric Jacobson...
Point of order, Madam Chair.
I'm asking what is you a question.
Hang on, Fred. What is the point of order, Adriana?
You can't do point of order on a point of order.
No,
you can't do a point of order on a point of order.
It's not, question. Fred, Stop both of you right now. Fred, it's not a point of order on a point of order. You made a point of information, right? You asked a question. No one got to answer your question. Stop. You asked a question.
I got interrupted.
No one got to answer it yet. And Adriana raised, you can interrupt to make a point of information. That is in Robert's rules, Fred. So get with the program. Adriana, what is the point of order?
That was, Madam Chair, he gained the floor with a point of information, and it's not a question. A point of information is a question. No,
he asked the question. Excuse me, Adriana. He asked the question. He said, was Eric Jacobson working with the Ziri crowd?
No, he talked
that
much
was his question.
More than that.
I'm sorry, I heard the question.
Okay.
Thank you for the non-point of order. Okay.
Julie, this is Heather. I'm going to comment.
Yes, go ahead, Heather.
Further complex. The time is up on this item. I just want you to know.
Okay.
On this agenda item, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Where we are, folks, where we were, was I was going through to find out, because there were a couple of hands up to speak to my motion, and I wanted to see, did those people have something to say on the motion? And we got a little sidetracked there, but that motion is still on the floor, and we can do one of two things. We could keep talking about this, and I will remind you all that we have a time certain to go to closed session of 10:30 p.m., which is in 24 minutes. So we could extend to keep talking about this, in which case we don't hear anything from the ED report or the general counsel report. We risk not hearing either of those. Or we could just go to a vote on the motion, or rather than a vote necessarily, see if there are any objections to the motion. Are there any objections to the motion on the floor about the October meeting by October 2nd and reporting October 5th? Are there any objections to the motion? Hearing no objections, we'll consider the motion passed. And so we'll take this up again at the next meeting. Again, please, folks, cooperate, work with each other, and don't sit back on your heels and wait for someone else to do all the work. Roll your sleeves up and get to work. All right. That's that item on the agenda. Next up was the ED report and Q&A, and this is a 20-minute item. Stephanie.
Thank you. So in the ED report that was sent out to everybody today, over the past couple of months when I've been listing the aged payables of concern, people have asked what are the other aged payables and what makes something a concern or not. So even though on the title of the ED report it lists payables of concern, I actually should have changed that title and just listed it as aged payables. So I have added to that list other aged payables that we have that maybe had not been on the aged payables of concern in the past. I also separated, so for those that don't have the list in front of them, so our aged payables as of today, 9/21, not including any of our outstanding loans, is $1,099,427. I separated out the, and I can reduce some of that because if we go to Hartford Insurance, which was the workman's comp insurance that was due on the 30th, we did pay that workman's comp insurance yesterday, so we can reduce $14,000 from that. I have the subtotal amount and then the total amount because I separated out the FJC loans and the SBA EIDL as well. I made contact with someone at the SBA to kind of discuss what they meant when they said relief may be possible. And they have forwarded my questions and concerns as to what that relief may be to someone else. So I am still awaiting a phone call from them. But we are approximately about $54,600 due in past due payments. And then our unpaid interest for our FJC loan, we have past due unpaid interest of $166,127. And then the most recent interest payment that is due 9/30, which includes the increase in the interest because of past due payments not made, is $117,245. I have listed on there on the aged payable list the total amount, which would include the past due interest and then also if we were to pay it off. And the payoff amount for the FJC loan is $2.8 million. And the payoff amount for the EIDL is about $2.1 million. It's $2,079,000. So we are sort of knocking away at a lot of these bills. WBAI made a substantial payment thanks to a donor, and then they were able to get matching funds for that donor. So they made a substantial payment for the four Times Square, their tower rent. So we greatly appreciate that. They also, WBAI also made from a bequest that they had received a year's worth of central service payments to the national office. And with that, we were able to start making a lot of payments on things that needed to be paid, including the workman's comp insurance, some of the some past due bills that were imperative that we pay them. So we are grateful for that. One of the things that is also in the list that was in the ED report that kind of took us a little bit by surprise, but we had to pay a past due bill of $14,900 for invoices from 2015 to 2019 to the audit firm that does the yearly audit of the Pacifica Retirement Plan. Prior to 2015, invoices had been paid from the assets from that plan, but the plan was terminated at some point. I do not know when that was. I'm assuming it was around 2019, and there are no assets that were left in that plan. Therefore, none of the invoices had been paid. So they received notification also from the IRS that the tax form 5500-5500, which you are supposed to, you know, put in, which you are supposed to submit, that outlines retirement plans had not been filed since 2015. So we were facing delinquent penalties upwards to $250 a day from the IRS, and then also penalties from the Department of Labor of $1,100 per day. And those were late fees that would have incurred or would have sort of built up from 2015 when those weren't filed. So if you do the math, it's kind of a nasty number. So what we were able to do is to avoid having to file those late fees and to submit, we've been allowed to submit those delinquent 550s under the IRS delinquent filer program. And then all of that is being handled by the company that used to do this audit on the retirement plan. So that $14,900 was paid. We're avoiding those penalties from the IRS and the Department of Labor, and they're starting that audit of the now defunct Pacifica retirement plan. So we'll be able to catch up on those things that were ignored from 2015 to 2019. We also have we've agreed to an extension of the union agreement with KPFK. Knowing just of the financial issues and the possibility of, you know, selling the building or moving, they did agree to having, rather than kind of going into any sort of union bargaining and discussions now, they agreed to go ahead and extend that for 6 months. So that's effective from September 15th through March 15th. As far as the report on the cabs, I've had some luck, not a lot of luck, with contacting everybody. Some people aren't really quite sure or not everybody has a cab, but nothing is really, nothing has been updated on a most recent, on a recent basis. I was very pleased that a lot of these stations have information regarding the cabs on their website. But for example, KPFA, nothing has really been updated on their website, since February of 2020. On KPFK, there isn't any information on the website, which is a surprise because that's the group that I've been able to connect with the most, actually, are the members of the KPFK cab. KPFT has probably the best available cab information on their website. They actually even have a website that's dedicated to KPFTCommunityAdvisoryBoard.org that you can link to, and it has contact information, but it is outdated, but there is a lot of potential there, so that's a great, that's kind of a great example of what possibly the stations can move to. And the same with WBAI and WBAI has a link to their cab, but they don't have any listings or updates on the webpage at all. It's just blank. And WPFW has a great section on their website that is just basically transparency, I think it's called. And it lists links to, you know, the audited financial statements, the LSB listings, the cab listings, any sort of information that's extremely helpful when I was doing the CPB grant, because all of that information was right there on one page. So that too would be something that I would like to see all the stations do. But the WPFW cab information has not been updated since 2020. So what I have done is that I have created a survey that I am sending out to the cab members and the cab leads, and then I want just kind of a general feel also of how cab members feel about their being on the cab. And so I'm breaking down the questions that were in the motion and adding it there. I'm adding a couple of others and kind of rewording it rather than like, how many times have you met during the past year? I want to go back to 2022 as well, so I can get kind of a brief paragraph of how your cab, you know, how the cab was formed. Technically all of our cabs were formed in 2010, but I don't know if that really has held true. And then maybe, you know, asking how many times they've met in 2022, how many times they've met in 2023. And then also just kind of rather than, and the motion is great, but rather than kind of asking questions to them about what they are or are not doing, I also want to ask questions if they, as being a member of the cab, do you feel that you're being listened to? Do you feel that you have enough tasks when you create, you know, do you feel supported in a way? So I'm not only kind of having those questions that are pinpointed as to this is what you should be doing, but you're not doing, I also want to have it turn around so they can also give feedback to me as to if they feel that they are being, if they are a vital part of the advising capacity that they should have. Do they feel that they are actually making a significant difference and supporting the LSBs and supporting the stations? And if they kind of understand, you know, cabs talk to the LSBs talk to the PNB and kind of deal with that structure. I just have a couple of other questions to work on with that survey. I'm having a couple of people take a look at it and just go through the survey first to make sure that it flows and it makes sense. And then that will be sent out to everybody. So I'll have a better idea and a printout of how people responded and how they answered by our next meeting. Any questions?
All right. I see hands, Dingman, Beth, and McFadden. No. Beth and McFadden. Go ahead, Beth.
Legacy hand. Thanks.
Go Alan ahead, for the McFadden. Staff. And then Teresa. Go ahead, McFadden.
Yes, Stephanie. I just was going to ask if you've got any timetables from the general managers on when we'll be getting budgets for the following year from the various stations?
Everybody is working on it. Markeisha and I are actually working over the next couple of days on just finalizing very simplified budgets that we can present to the National Finance Committee to review. And they will be based upon the ending statements from last year, the most recent consolidated financials that we have now, and then projecting out based upon those recent consolidated financials as to what we're going to look at for the rest of the year. There have been And then we'll have those to be able to give to the National Finance Committee by the meeting on Tuesday. And then, as I've mentioned to the National Finance Committee as well, is that the goal will then be to review those budgets at least once a month, since it meets twice a month, to be able to project out where we are with those budgets and make any sort of changes regarding if we see any changes in the expenses or any changes in the revenue, and to be able to really work with that committee on these kind of living documents with budgets. So I will share those with the general managers, and the general managers have been working on budgets. I've received some from, WBAI. I've talked to Maria and Antonio about it. But I did see today that there were some emails going around that said that KPFA will not be creating a budget for next year. So So that was just a series of emails and concerns that I got today, and a lot of phone calls from people. But regardless, there will be budgets that will be presented to the National Finance Committee by the meeting on Tuesday.
Next, I think, was Teresa.
Stephanie, can you tell me, you said you just found out about some delinquent bills from 2015 through 2019. Is there a reason why these kinds of things didn't come to your attention until now? I mean, were they going to the wrong place or what?
You know, I don't know, honestly. I mean, Markeisha and I get kind of surprised with emails from people that give us, send us bills on a regular, almost every week we'll find something that is new. Or if I know that there's people that we owe money to, I actually reach out to them and say, can you please send me an updated invoice? I did that recently with Radio Research Consortium, and I've done that with ASCAP and with BMI, just because I know we owe them money. This was something that either the audit company possibly that was doing the audit for these invoice for the retirement plan, they might have received notifications because they had worked on our behalf back in 2014, that maybe they had started to receive penalty notices from the IRS and the Department of Labor. I'm not too sure. So they reached out to us and said, you have to get these paid because we do not want you. And they said, as much as we know that you guys don't have the money or that you want to incur this cost, you do not want to incur any sort of late filing penalties from the IRS or being audited by the Department of Labor. And we have been audited by the Department of Labor just for this purpose, almost a decade or so ago. So we are on their radar, and I don't want to do it again. So I'm not too sure why, if people just kind of give up after a while, if we're not paying them and then randomly we'll send something out. I'm really not too sure. And sometimes bills were sent to personal email addresses of former EDs rather than the ed@pacifica.org address.
So do you ask them who they sent their past bills to? So maybe we can find out who's getting those bills or who got them. And was that $14,000, was that to them or to the IRS?
That was to them.
Okay, and we still owe IRS, or we only owe IRS?
We don't owe the IRS anything. This company had not audited our retirement plan and for quite a few years, because bills had not been paid.
Right.
And where the notifications were that we hadn't filed the 550s or the 5500 forms, I am not too sure where those would have been going. That might have been from former business managers, former CFOs, former finance people. Each station might have been filling out those forms in the past. So this is the IRS was just looking at almost, 2015, and that's what prompted this. A lot of companies, thankfully, they just know that we don't have the money, and so they don't continue to bombard us with invoices.
Okay, well, you do have some general managers that are not notifying you of bills that they pay.
And we are working on that's why we want to move everything into a consolidated into one bank. So then we have greater access to being able to look at the statements each month, and also implementing a check request forms, and so that payments for bills will come from the Pacifica Foundation, and that will be through check requests that would have attached receipts, and then those would be sent to me for approval. They would be sent to Markeisha, and then we will issue checks to our vendors on a regular basis.
So two quick questions, just simple answer. So effective immediately, all general managers are sending these things to you. You must see them.
Fiscal year, start of the fiscal year.
Okay. The second question is, how much of the money that we owe is just from delinquent penalties, as you called it?
Well, these weren't penalties. We were avoiding penalties from the IRS. Mm-hmm. The amount of money that we have that's due is the when I get an invoice, this is what's past due.
But my question is, because we're delinquent on things, how much of the money that is sitting there is because we're accruing penalties because we're not paying things on time?
We're not accruing penalties with our vendors.
Well, that's nice. Thank you. That's surprising. Thank you.
We plead with them a lot and send lots of cookies, flowers, cards.
Well done, Stephanie. Dingaman's next.
Yeah, wow, Jack in the Box bills coming in. I noticed that the real estate commercial market in LA is still, 40? I'm looking at these 22.5% vacancy rates. So first question, is there any movement on the building? Does in your calculations, has it become a point where it's counterproductive to sell it, or are we still more or less motivated to get that liquidity?
We will be discussing the building a little bit more in closed session.
We do
have a couple of offers that are out there, that we'll be discussing, and we're also, working on pulling out a couple of Hail Marys to see if we can get some, to get some help.
Stephanie's right. We'll talk about this in closed session, Jim. Sorry, I just inadvertently muted you in the middle of your question. I apologize.
Oh, that's all right. That's all right. I often need to be silenced. All right, thank you.
Sagerton, you're next. And if you're speaking, Jim, you're muted. Did Jim step away from his phone?
No, Chair, I was unmuting myself on the Zoom app rather than on the phone. So anyway, we have a myriad of interpretations of the bylaws where it says that the budgets originate with management, and then the LSBs, it's one of the responsibilities of the LSB and the bylaws, the LSBs review and approve the budget. And, they go to the local finance committees, then they go to the LSBs, then they come to the NFC. Is that process, in your vision, which we have traditionally interpreted as part of our bylaws compliance, is that process going to continue? Is that going to be happening in parallel with the other process? Or is the process that you're doing for stations that aren't doing the traditional process, how is that going to play out?
Let me change my, or close my window
Stephanie, Stephanie, before you speak, okay, she stepped away. Julie, the time is up on this item on the executive report, so I just want you to know.
Yep. All right.
I closed my window just for a second because there's some noise of landscapers in my backyard.
Go ahead and answer the question, Stephanie.
Yeah, I mean, it's a process that I definitely, want to respect and continue, but it seems to, the concept of creating a budget, and I'm only generalizing here,
seems to be extremely stress-inducing for the parties that are involved in creating the budget. So the general managers have, and the business managers in particular, have a better grasp of their expenses and their income. Not all the stations have business managers. And some of the local finance committees have somewhat of a difficult time either meeting with, talking to, or understanding the logistics behind some of the general managers' budgets. And everybody seems, there's quite a few groups that seem to be creating budgets separately. So as much as it is a great process, I mean, I think there's still some budgets from this current fiscal year that haven't been approved yet because they haven't really been finalized. So I don't want to, again, disrespect the process, but I really do want to be able to get numbers down on paper prior to the start of the fiscal year. And then I want to have the general managers or the business managers and the local finance committee representatives, which are part of the LSB, I mean, part of the PNB, to be an active role in the finance committee where we are actively looking at those budgets, again, on a monthly basis and projecting out where we might have problems and where we might, you know, have our successes. So I don't know if that completely answers your question, but the process seems to be somewhat stagnating in who's getting what done and at what time and how quickly they can get it done.
May I have a follow-up, Chair?
Make it quick.
Yeah, I agree with you, Stephanie. You know, the problem has been on the NFC that we're not getting the budgets to review because the process drags out and there's all the difficulties you described with it. So I think one interpretation we could do is that the budgets are supposed to originate with management, your management. So we're originating some budgets here, and then we can put them through the process, and the local management can work with it, and the LSPs can work with it, and we can still go through that process. You're just kind of jump-starting the process by coming up with something prior to the beginning of the fiscal year, which is totally appropriate, and you know, we'll take it from there.
Correct.
Thank you.
Hey, that ends that. I allowed, Heather said time, and I allowed Stephanie to finish answering Sagerton's question. And so that means we're moving on to the next agenda item, which is the general counsel report and Q&A. Arthur, do you have anything you'd like to share in open session?
Just one more piece of good news. The WBAI got notice that there's a bequest where somebody owned a building in Park Slope, which is a well-to-do neighborhood in Brooklyn, where they got 20% of whatever the sale price is going to be. So we don't know exactly what it's worth, but just looking at sales in on that block, it's worth anywhere from $600,000. $1.5 million. So that'll be nice. That's all. Otherwise, we have other active bequest fights going on in California, one in KPFK land and one in KPFA land. But they're, you know, we're still in the midst of, we lawyered up on the KPFK one. We're trying to find the right kind of lawyer on the KPFA one, which is Steffi and I got an email this afternoon saying it's not really an estate thing. It's a lawyer practice thing, but we'll figure that out.
That one's actually the archives, not KPFA.
Oh, the archives. Sorry.
Yes.
That's it. That's all. Nothing.
Thanks.
We have no active
point of information.
Could I just say we have two live lawsuits. But the New Day one is adjourned to February, and so nothing's going on. And the Rideau one is adjourned till April for trial. Mm-hmm. Nothing's going on there. So we're actually not spending any money on legal. Yay.
Thank you. Is the Park Slope property, would the entire proceeds of that go to WBAI or is it to be split with someone?
20%.
20%. Gotcha. Okay. Okay.
Oh, by the way, there was one other thing. When WBAI got, as Stephanie reported, they paid $100,000 in central services and paid off some other big debts that they had. They got a bequest and it went into the bank account and all of a sudden we found out that there was a lien on the account from a judgment that I had gotten lifted in 2019. And somebody had come back around 4 years later and used the same lien to the same judgment, which had been lifted to, and settled for $1,000. They back on the account. I used kind of a sledgehammer, ordered a show cause, motion for sanctions, and the next day they said, oh, sorry, we made a mistake. So that was a legal, quick legal skirmish.
Got it. Who had the point of information? Teresa, go ahead.
I'm sorry, Arthur, I did not hear what you said when you were answering the question about the fights for bequests. And it might not make a difference, but you said something about KPFK, and then you said something about an archives. Was there a bequest to the archives that's in question?
Yeah, there's some complicated bequest to the archives. There was two wills, and we did well under one, and we did poorly under the other, and somebody screwed up somebody's estate, and so we're with the people who are with Will A versus Will B or Will B versus Will A or whatever. It's not just us. There's other people.
Thank you.
Dingaman has a question.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask you about that lien, Arthur. So in other words, this is sort of a copyright chaser as opposed to an ambulance chaser.
Yeah, it was a copyright. It was a photographer who sues everybody for violating copyright, and he had gotten a default judgment back in 2019 by serving WBAI at the wrong address and serving the national when there was nobody in the national office up in the Bay Area at the time. And, so I'd gotten that lifted. It was the first thing I did for Pacifica. I'd gotten that default judgment lifted and then, settled the case. And so there are firms that in New York, they probably exist elsewhere, that just literally go around and find open judgments and they buy them and then they like levy on them. And, that was what this was.
It's my understanding. Maybe you can correct me that the individual concerned did not own the copyright to the photo to begin with, and it was owned by someone else who didn't agree to go along with it, or is that incorrect?
I don't remember. It was 4 years ago. No, I think it was his.
Any other questions for Arthur? Well, folks, it's 10:38, and we were scheduled to go into executive session at a time certain of 10:30, so that we missed by 8 minutes when we got a roughly 15-minute late start is not too awful. There are two items that, okay, so two more items that were on supposed to be on the open portion of the agenda. One was a motion from the Strategic Planning Committee about which there was some debate in email as to whether it was actually a motion from the committee as opposed to a motion from some on the committee, not passed by the committee. And there was also the we decided to do this last week to postpone the motion on community advisory boards from the Strategic Planning Committee to tonight, pending Stephanie's report on CABS. And I think, you know, the upshot of Stephanie's report is that she'll come back with hopefully more information when we meet again on October 5th. And so I would argue if we just move into executive session now, we are effectively postponing that motion to the October 5th meeting, which is basically what we want to do anyway. So can I get a motion to move into executive session?
No more. I move.
Thank you, Adriana and Teresa second. Thank you. Are there any objections to the motion to move into executive session? Hearing none. At 10:40 p.m., we'll consider ourselves adjourned to, not adjourned, we're moved into executive session.